This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
What's up, my sinners? Welcome to yet another episode of Lead Singer Syndrome, a podcast where I, your host, Shane Told, talks to other lead singers about what it's like to be the front man or front woman of a band. And we have a cool thing going on. For 2 weeks, we have a very special, what I like to call mini-series with these new hotshots, the new kids on the block, I Prevail, and this band seemingly came out of nowhere. They are killing it right now on tour, headlining. They're going to be on the entire Vans Warped Tour, basically headlining. They're one of the top billed bands, and like I said, they came out of nowhere. All of a sudden, I'm hearing about them. People are freaking out about them. I'm hearing about them selling out shows everywhere. And I just did not understand what was going on. And I thought it would be a great opportunity to get them on the show and hear about their story. So if you're not familiar with the band, they're a, you know, I don't know what you'd call them. They have two singers. They have a singer and a screamer. They're kind of heavy, kind of poppy. But they're a great band, great rock band. They blend a lot of styles. So I thought it would be a great opportunity to have both their two front men on the show. So this week, I'm going to speak with Eric Vanlerberg. He is the unclean vocalist, the screamy guy. And then next Monday, we'll be back with Brian, who is the clean vocalist. So it's going to be really cool. I ask some of them the same questions. I talk to them about a wide variety of things, but really I find their story super, super compelling and super interesting, and I hope that you do as well. Before we get into part one with Eric, I just want to say thank you again to everybody who listens to the show, who's subscribed. If you're a member of the All Access Club, big, big, big love to you. That stuff's all awesome. As for me right now, I am hanging out in California. I am on my solo tour, which has been so much fun. I'm just about halfway through right now. I played Anaheim last night at the House of Blues, the little room there. It was such an amazing show. So I know there were some sinners there, which are, you know, I call you guys my sinners. It's just a very nice thing to say. So I know there's some people there, which was awesome. It was great to see some familiar faces. Tonight I'm in San Diego. And when you hear this on Monday, I will be in Los Angeles. So if you are listening to this on Monday morning, come out tonight. I'll be LA at the Resident. And I really hope I can do more solo shows soon. And also, I'm working on a full-length record. So that will come out, and you will know about it super, super soon. Also, by the way, if you want to get in touch, feel free. It's really, really easy to get a hold of me and give me suggestions for the show, upcoming guests. Maybe there's another mini-series I should do. I don't know. I'm down for some themes on this show. And really, like, as much as it's my show, it's your show, too. As a listener, I really want you to get your say. I love this podcast, and I do this for me, for first and foremost, but I do love when people say, oh my God, that was so cool. Thank you so much for doing that. Thank you so much for having that guy on or that girl on and just teaching me or learning about that thing. So please get in touch, leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. We've also got an Instagram, which is leadsingersyndrome. We're on Twitter. That's a great way to fire over a real quick note. It's @leadsingersyn. Also, we've got the hate line. So if you're not so happy, maybe you don't like I Prevail. And maybe you don't want me wasting 2 weeks on them. That's fine. You know what? You can let me have it. Feel free to call to leave me a message. 657-666-HATE. Again, that's 1-657-666-HATE. You can leave me a message, and I will roll some clips one of these weeks. Also, we got the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club. This podcast will always be free. However, if you want more content, if you want more interaction with me, if you want Lead Singer Syndrome merchandise, if you want to meet other fans of the show and talk about music, sports, movies, whatever, we talk about it all on the Facebook group. It's awesome. Please check out leadsingersyndrome.com/allaccess. For as little as $6 a month, you can be a part of something pretty cool, and it really does help us keep the lights on. All right, that's all for now. I'm going to talk to Eric, and I will talk to you after. So here it is, my conversation with Eric, the unclean vocalist of I Prevail.
I let you bury me alive for far too long. We're climbing back up to the surface, back to where I belong. I know it's clear that you're the worst part of me. How did I ever let you claw your way in so deep?
Hey, Eric.
Hey, what's going on, man?
Dude, I'm just chilling, man. Just chilling. It's a lovely Friday. Friday afternoon. How are you, man?
Dude, I'm doing great. Day off on a Friday, and we're going to be hanging out at a festival today, seeing some of our friends, so it's going to be a good day.
That sounds great. Day off on a Friday is a weird thing.
Doesn't yeah,
that like,
yeah,
shouldn't especially... you like be firing your booking agent or something for that? Like,
you know, what's funny is I think we actually have a show on a Monday on this tour. I think it's actually this Monday we have a show, and we have a Friday off, and I'm kind of like, wait a minute.
Yeah, like that. That's, it's funny because it's happened a couple times. Tours like, you know, my band has been on, and it almost always happened like on support tours, because every time we like do a headline tour, we plan it out. Like, we don't let that shit fly. But I mean, you know, it does happen with like various stuff just not being available. But yeah, for people that don't know that are listening to this, typically like Mondays are the day off day, and Fridays like almost never, because shows are, you know, banging on Fridays. Let's be real.
Yeah, exactly.
That's great, man. So how's the tour been? I mean, God, I have so much to ask you. I've been following you guys for a while, and it's like really crazy just how like intense everything's gotten and how big you guys have gotten. Like, obviously not overnight, but you know, that's the expression, overnight success. How's the tour been? Like, how's it been, you know, based on when you booked it, the expectations?
This tour has been killer, man. We've only been on it for a couple days so far. We've had two festival days in Florida, played 2 days in Alabama and North Carolina. Tennessee. But those three.
How dare you mix up North Carolina and Tennessee?
Because we just drove through North
Carolina. How dare you? There's so many upset people in Nashville right now. Okay, go ahead. No, I'm sorry.
No. Oh, please forgive me. the three headlining shows are just, I mean, incredible. Last night was sold out. It's the turnout of fans, the kids that are coming out and singing along and buying merch and waiting for us to sign stuff after. It's unbelievable, man. It's such an awesome feeling to see that we have so many dedicated fans that will come out and see us time and again.
Well, time and again, I mean, I'm sure a lot of these people, they're seeing you for the first time. I mean, like, you know, I mean, your band hasn't been together that long, you know, relatively speaking. You're a new band, and relatively speaking, you know, the popularity that you've experienced is, you know, new. You know, it's not like my band, we've been together for 17 fucking years, like, you know, so it's a lot different of a thing. But I really, like, back to my question, I'm going to kind of push you on it. It's like, I'm sure you booked the tour, whatever, 5-6 months ago. Mm-hmm. And you know, you book it in these sort of venues, and now you're just like blowing the roof off these places, like selling them out in advance. That must just be like kind of a wild feeling. Like, has it kind of hit you yet that this is happening, or you know, how's it been personally for you? Just kind of like being like, oh my God, like we were not expecting this.
When I said time and time again, I see these kids coming out to the show, and it's like their fifth time in the last 2 years, and it's like, holy shit, we already have kids that are coming out 5-6 times.
Oh, okay.
And, I know that's that, yeah. I know there's two girls in Michigan back in our home state that have seen us, I think, 16 times, and it's like Jesus, that's insane. But
yeah,
it's crazy. Like, we've only been touring for about 2.5 years, and we've been a band for just about 3.5. And I mean, going from our first headlining tour to playing our first festivals, to going overseas to Australia just a few months ago for the first time.
Yeah.
It's every time we get like I get one of those bucket lists, you know, checked off, it's the other one's already happening. I don't even have time to process like what just happened.
Right. There's no physical list anymore. There's like, it's just, yeah. It's there and it's gone and it's like on to the next thing. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
That's
but
wild.
It's such a great, yeah, it's such a great feeling too, though. I mean, like every minute, like even now just talking to you, it's like, I'm looking back on things like that literally just happened a couple months ago going, holy shit, I forgot that happened. That's insane. Like how lucky we are to have all these moments to look back and just, you know, feel good about.
It is really cool, and it's really great to see, and I love your exuberance and that you're, you know, really like relishing the moment and just excited about it. That's awesome, man. So I want to, you know, first time on the show, obviously, I'd love to talk to you about just kind of how you got to where you are. How old are you now?
I'll be 26 in a couple months.
26, okay. So growing up, I know you're from Michigan, Southfield, Michigan, which is kind of cool. It's kind of a near and dear place to my heart. I spent a lot of time in Michigan. I lived in Royal Oak for a while, actually. So I know the area very well, and I know how Michiganders are about the pride of Michigan. I know how that is. I know how it is growing up. I know music is just very, very important, especially with some of the like blue-collar people. You know, it's funny, you go around the country and you talk about like Kid Rock, and people kind of laugh, and then you go to Michigan and you talk about Kid Rock, and he's like a hero.
Man, he'll sell out 7 shows at DTE in a row in the summer, and blows my mind.
Oh yeah, he did like some crazy amount of shows at Ford Field, like it was insane. I mean, I know, yeah. but I'm just kind of wondering. And then this lead up to my question is just growing up in Michigan. How was it? You know, obviously, like I'm kind of curious what your family structure was like, and just kind of was there music in the household? How did that work for you as a kid growing up?
Honestly, I grew up in Mount Clemens area, and, I grew up, I got 2 sisters and my mom and dad, and we ran our own business. My dad runs his own car restoration shop. And, honestly, I was at either a car show every weekend or I was traveling, playing baseball. Music really wasn't really a part of my life that much until I think it was early high school. I started getting into like all these underground bands and these what we call Warped Tour bands and stuff. And,
yeah.
Your band was obviously one of them.
thank you.
Big fan of Silverstein growing up. But, when I was in high school, you know, going through, you know, certain things, low points in my life, there was some music that really, inspired me and, you know, changed my way of thinking. Or even there's one album that I hold near and dear is Still Searching by Sense of Fail.
Yeah.
That album really changed my life when I was a kid. Like, I was going through a lot and really depressed and done a lot of stupid things through that depression. And hearing that album, that really, I got something out of it, and it really impacted my life in such a positive way that a couple of years later, I met this kid. He was playing music, writing his own music, and I saw him at his own headlining show, and there's a couple hundred people there. And I think I was 19 and he was 17, I think, at the time. And I was just blown away that a kid could write his own music. And at that point I was starting to learn how to like sing and scream and all that shit. So, I found a band. I love to write. I love writing. And it just kind of took off from there out of nowhere. You know, there's no really, family or anything that was into music. I was really the first one.
That's crazy. Yeah, it's everyone's story is different, you know, and that's why I love this show and why I love doing this podcast every week. And everyone's story is unique. That's funny that you know, you talk about sports, baseball specifically, being something. Are you still a huge baseball fan? You still follow it? I assume you're a Tigers fan. Has that started to take a bit of a backseat to music now as you've gotten into this being, you know, music taking over your life?
It's been difficult. I remember, you know, growing up and going to Tigers games, 3 or 4 times, 5 times a year, playing baseball and all that. But, now with music and traveling, I'll try and check this, you know, check the scores every now and then. But anytime we're in a city and we're near a ballpark, I got to go check it out.
So nice.
Like I've been to,
yeah.
I've been to the Seattle Mariners field. I snuck into Fenway after one of our shows at the House of Blues. And when I mean I snuck in there, it was after hours. There was no one in there. I don't know how the hell me and my friend got in there, but
did you get on the field?
We got to walk around. Yeah, we got maybe or maybe not. I don't want to get in trouble.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, no, we totally snuck in, walked around the field, maybe stepped out on the field for a minute. But it was crazy. So yeah, no, me baseball and hockey, I definitely the band, we're all big
cool
sports heads, that's meatheads. Cool. So
meatheads? You're a bunch of meatheads. I prevail as a bunch of meatheads. You heard it here first. There you go. No, that's cool. No, I'm a huge baseball fan too, and that is one thing I love about touring. Going out, being able to check out different ballparks. And I remember sometimes I'll go and if there's a day game, sometimes if you can't even get a ticket, actually, if you just kind of go around the eighth or ninth inning later on, a lot of times they'll just let you in.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And just I usually just say, hey, I just want to go. I'm a big baseball fan. I'm from out of town. I just kind of want to check out the ballpark. And I've had a few places just be like, yeah, sure, come on in. Or there's been times when there hasn't even been anyone at the gate
before, too.
Yeah. I did that in PNC Park in Pittsburgh, which is a beautiful park.
Oh man, I can't wait to see that one.
Yeah, it's a gorgeous one. It's one of my favorites.
So who's your team?
Blue Jays, 100%.
Oh, all right. Fair enough.
But I talked about earlier how living in Michigan for a little while, I actually used to go to so many Tigers games, and my ex girlfriend now, she would work, and I would wouldn't have anything to do. So if there was ever a Tigers day game, I'd just go by myself. I love baseball so much, and so I developed a pretty soft spot for the Tigers and some of the players, especially that I still follow, So
yeah,
man, no, it's just funny. The whole sports and music thing is interesting because I feel like as a kid, for me, sports and music were my life, both of them were, and they both were able to live together. And then I hear about a lot of people that are like, oh no, I fucking hated sports because these jocks bullied me, and they were the sports guys, and I was this weird music guy, and they didn't understand it, so that's kind of the interesting thing about it, I find, and that's kind of why I wanted to ask you. How was your experience growing up in school like that, in high school or whatever? What were you like?
Well, that's funny, because I was just going to say, I was that kid that was that was playing baseball, I was on the sports team, I was the kid hanging out with the emo kids. Straightening his hair, wearing tight jeans and shit. So
yeah.
I was kind of had the best of both worlds or the worst of both worlds, whatever you want to call it. I don't know if you've seen, I got really curly hair, so I would just straighten the front of my hair and look like an idiot the whole day. But thinking that was cool.
That's funny, man. Well, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, but yeah, that's pretty much sums up high school, was just trying to fit in with anyone I could. I was that kid that just drifted from click to click. But I think that's kind of where I ended up in the my junior senior year, hanging out with the kids that were listening to System of a Down and Slipknot and Audio Slave and stuff like that. So I was like, oh, okay, this is cool. So that really got me into that underground music or that not so radio friendly music.
Audio Slave is pretty radio friendly, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
So is System of a Down. I won't call you out anymore. No, I get what you're saying.
Okay,
man. I want to talk first of all, you're the screamer, you're the unclean vocalist, whatever they're calling it these days. That role in your band, are you growing up like obviously you said you got into singing, you got into screaming, are you a singer or as well as a screamer? Do you do that in the band ever? What's your kind of your role there?
I do here and there, a line here and there, backing up, helping out, but mainly it's just the screaming.
And are you confident with singing at all? Is it something you're trying to work on more, or is it's kind of your role?
Definitely something I need to work on and want to work on, but I've never done it in front of a crowd just on my own before. So I can Brian will be singing and I'll go stand behind him and do a little harmony or something like that.
Stand behind him. That's very funny. Yeah. Well, having two singers, two front men, whatever you want to call it, singer, screamer, that whole thing has been, obviously it's been done. You're not the first band to do it and you won't be the last. How did that kind of come up when you guys were forming the band? How did you decide that was the kind of, band, you wanted to put together, or when did you come into the whole mix?
Me, Brian, and a couple of other guys were all in, local bands growing up and stuff. And, later, after college or during college, he quit one band. I was in the process of leaving one band, and him and Steve met up. They wrote, a demo. They met up with me and they're like, "Hey, we heard you're a vocalist looking for a band." And, that's kind of how the band formed. That's just the quick version. When we were talking and stuff, we were going over our influences and stuff and what kind of genre and where we were at, what do we want to write and stuff. And, bands like We Came as Romans, another, local Michigan band. Yeah. We saw that. We're like, "That, hey, they killed it. There shouldn't be any problem with us, two vocalist thing." And you start looking at even bands Hollywood and Dead, where it's there's six dudes up there and they're all just singing and rapping and shit. But, it's like you said, it's been done, and we figured that, something's been done, and it's something that we, music that we listen to, Issues, and What Was Me, and, all those bands, we were like, yeah, these bands done it, and they kill it, it shouldn't be a problem at all. Well, I'm sure we can do it, and we'll put our own little twist to it or something. We'll try it, So far, it seems to be doing pretty well.
You must have had a lot of comparisons to We Came as Romans, too, at the beginning, being, both being Michigan guys. They're from, aren't they from Royal Oak, basically?
I think they're Troy, Royal Oak area. Yeah,
we're talking about, for people that are not familiar with suburban Detroit geography, that's 10 minutes, 15-minute drive up the 75 or whatever. Maybe you got to go across 11 mile and whatever. It's okay. But no, at the beginning, was there ever a thing where it's maybe we're a little too close to this other band from Michigan? Did you ever get accused of ripping them off or trying to be the next coming of them? Or were you just fuck it, whatever. We're going to do our own thing and not worry about it.
I'm sure there's been a couple people that said, we're just a rip off of this band or that band. Yeah. I'm sure every band gets that at some point. But I don't think we got. I think we were far enough from their sound. Yeah, any person can be like, "Oh, they sing and scream," but they sound the same just because they both sing and scream. But I think we have enough difference in music where it's to any new fan that hears both of us or hears us with another band. There's enough of a difference in the music where it's like, okay, the only thing similar is they're from Michigan and they have two vocalists.
I know. And you're totally right. The other thing about having two frontmen too, and part of why I'm going on this so much is I'm going to talk to Brian, presumably. I know he's not feeling well today. I was just going to talk to him actually first.
He's being a little bitch.
Oh, damn, man. Shots fired. I'm going to tell him you said that. But having two frontmen, that must really take the pressure off. And not just performing, because obviously I'm the only singer in my band and I do singing and screaming, so it is more involved in that front. I'm not trying to say I'm better or anything. I'm just saying the point of my question is that it really must take the pressure off to where you have two frontmen. So somebody might be like, "Oh man, Eric, this, and then Brian can kind of step in, or vice versa." Has that been a nice thing for you, where you don't feel like you have all of the frontman pressure?
I honestly think that it's a benefit or a positive for us. Not only on stage where it's like, okay, we play an hour and 15 minutes, when in reality it's half him, half me.
Yeah.
So it's cool. I'm not blowing my voice out. We're touring extensively. Being young, we're trying to get out there and tour as much as possible. So it's very, it's easier on our voices when we play, say, six shows in a row, and it's, in reality it's half, half and half. So, but, outside of that, doing interviews and whatever comes with being a front man, it's, yeah, it's nice to, you know, take a break. Brian's sleeping in right now. I'm doing an interview. Then later I'm going to go get drunk, and then he's going to be doing an interview. You know? So, you know, it works out. It's we get some breaks, and I, you know, I love Brian. He's like my brother. So it's like, anything that we're doing, it's like, hey, you want to take this one, or hey, dude, I'll take this one, or yeah, whatever. It's awesome. It can take a lot of weight off, you know, our shoulders, which is great.
Absolutely. How does it work writing for you guys? Because obviously, like, well, writing and figuring out where you're going to put whose parts when you're writing music, that's always something that I find kind of fascinating, how you can put that all together.
Well, we'll be sitting in the studio, just the handful of us, and we'll have a producer there, and we'll come in, you know, usually off tour, like me or Brian or Steve will have like little notes of ideas or something like that of a song or whatnot. And you know, we'll be sound checking, getting waiting to sound check, and Dylan or Steve will be riffing on the guitar, and they'll come up with a part, and they'll just kind of like keep messing with it throughout the tour. Then when we get home, we go to the studio, we'll have like, you know, those guitar parts or those ideas that we had. We'll start laying them out, tracking them out, and we kind of just get the feel for the song, whether it's going to be like, we'll write this last album. We did like, I think we had 12 songs from the intro, verse to chorus, and that was it. Yeah. And we were like, okay, cool. If we can get this first third of the song and kind of get a general feeling of emotion out of the instrumentals, that's what's going to decide whether it's going to take a heavy turn, whether it's going to be just a poppy, catchy rock song, whether it's going to be, a ballady kind of song. So it's kind of like, you know, we let it just naturally take its course. And if it calls for like, man, it'd be awesome to have just this heavy drop off on this song. It just goes heavy. Yeah. Well, that's what we'll do. Or if there's going to be a song that's like, man, no, it's got to stay high and light and energetic. We'll just go with that, you know. So,
well, yeah, very... it's hard. You guys have an interesting band because it's like sometimes you're a heavy band with singing and sometimes you're like kind of a poppy band with screaming, you know, and you kind of have everything in between. With your different, it sounds like it's a very like a collective, you know, band. Like you guys are all creative. You guys are all working on it. It's not just like one guy's show, which tends to happen with a lot of bands.
Right.
Do you guys ever have like internal turmoil with trying to decide that? Like, do you have guys that are more heavy music fans, guys that are more, you know, pop punk fans? Like, does that ever kind of butt heads on figuring out once you have that, as you say, intro versus chorus, what are you going to do for the bridge or outro or breakdown? Like, does that something that you guys kind of butt heads on?
You know, it's like we spent 3.5 years together, basically living in a little box for traveling and all that. We've become close. We're all brothers here. So, you know, just like any other sibling, we're going to have, you know, tiffs and fights, but you know, we'll get in the studio and there's been times where it's like, oh no, dude, this has got to stay light. This has got to stay this way. And there'll be another person be like, no, man, I'm feeling it.
Yeah.
Well, we may just take a break, go get lunch, come back and then, or, you know, come back the next day and work on it. And it kind of, we just let it sit and think about it. And 9 times out of 10, it always comes out like, no, you know, you were right. I'm feeling it. I see where you're going with that.
Right, right.
You know, on a CD, there's going to be 10 to 13 songs. Each person's going to get, you know, that, you know, say there's the four of us writing. Each one of us at some point is going to get that proud moment of being like, yes, that's the part that I was pushing for, and I'm so happy with that. You know, we all know that we're all going to, you know, have equal moments of getting that one part in that one song that we're super happy with. You know, it's all about choosing your battles and obviously overall just the better, what we all think and agree on is the better sound or the better style or whatever for our particular project, band, you know.
That's very well put. And with the vocals though, I mean, you talk a lot about the instrumentals and stuff and where you're going to go with it, but having two vocalists, you know, Brian doing the cleans, you doing the heavy stuff, how do you guys decide, like, okay, this part is going to have, I'm going to phrase this here, and with lyrics, like, how do you guys work on the lyrics together?
So, like, phrasing and stuff, we'll have the instrumental, and it just kind of, honestly, every song that we've had, it's always just been like, oh, man, yeah, screaming right there, oh, yeah, screaming right there. Or it'll be like, we'll hear an instrumental chorus, and then Brian will come up with a melody. And I'm like, yes, that's it. That's totally it. And it's luckily just every time it's been
pretty easy.
Supernatural.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it comes. And I love that. That's awesome. So there's no like, oh man, I could see it, but I don't know. We rarely ever have those moments, which is great. It's great. But, when we're talking about like lyrics and stuff, all of us usually come in with, you know, I love to write, and it's been a, you know, a couple days since I've sat down and tried writing, but, usually I'll write little, you know, paragraphs here and there, whether it's like a little, like set up like a poem or just like two lines or something that, you know, I'm thinking of. We'll go into the studio and we'll be like, all right, cool. This song is like, I'm feeling, you know, some kind of heartbreak about leaving and really wanting to stay. And I'll be like, oh, yo, I got a line that'll fit that. Let's kind of base it off that. And if we're all feeling it, we kind of just roll with that. Or say Brian will come in with something. And he's like, yeah, I'm feeling this. I got this line. And yeah. I'll be like, dude, I got something that'll match up with that. Let's work together on this. But it's kind of how it's been since day one, a very collaborative effort. And I'm so happy because I love it. I wouldn't have it any other way.
It's great. No, that's great, man. It's really good to hear that you guys are able to have a band like that and it isn't like just one guy's show. That's really cool. And it's actually quite rare. So that's cool. So you guys getting big so fast. I mean, I feel like I have to keep bringing that up because it's such a crazy thing for you guys. I remember when I heard about you guys, I had a friend who was going to come on tour with you guys or something and for a tour you were doing, and he was like, yeah, no, it's like a bus and a bus. I'm like, they're on a bus? Like, how is this band in a bus already? I think I heard their name, you know, and you guys kind of like very early on sort of went all in terms of like bringing production, having a bus,
yep,
like doing this stuff. Almost when in some ways you kind of didn't have any business doing that, you know, and I'm sure a lot of people were like, what the hell is this band doing? Who do these kids think they are? But you sort of predicted it, you know? So I kind of want to know what your take is on that and how you, where your head was at when you guys were probably collectively and with management making those decisions.
I mean, right off the get go, our first tour was a headliner and seeing the reaction and all, like how many tickets were being pre-sold and such. And we're like, this is mind blowing. Our first ever show was sold out to 450 kids. Like,
where was your first show?
Pittsburgh, the Altar Bar.
Wow. Cool.
Yeah. And then
rest
2 days
in peace.
Later,
that place is gone now, actually.
Yeah, yeah. I know. I was so bummed. I heard, we were actually booked to play one of the last shows and I guess the building people came in and said that they couldn't carry on. So I was really upset. I wanted to play one more time. But then our third show ever was our hometown at the Crowfoot, and we sold that out.
Oh my God, that's insane. Good for you guys. Wow.
Yeah.
I love
that
venue.
Thank you. Oh, it's one of my favorites, man. I love it. Growing up going there all the time. But going all in and getting, we had a bandwagon for the first two-thirds of our tour. Now we're just getting to where we're lucky enough to have a bus. But when we went in, we were like, cool, these kids have no idea what we're going to bring to the table. We've never played a show in our, as I Prevail, we've never played a show. We've practiced extensively. We know what we got. We got to blow these kids' minds. Like, we got to pull all the stops. So
yeah,
when we were putting up the production, we were like, all right, cool. Well, you know, we just from things like, you know, getting a wireless pack for the guitars, wireless mics and shit like that to make sure that we had, you know, solid equipment that was going to last us, you know, years. And same with the crew, like, you know, we could do it small time and just go out and play these venues, limited production just on our own, or we can start building a crew where we luckily had some friends that came out and started teching for us and doing sound and lights where they were all young and it was all their first tour. I mean, we didn't have our tour manager, light guy, and sound guy and merch guy have never been on tour before, just like us. So it was something cool. We were like, all right, cool. We're all doing this together. We're
figuring
all
it out together.
We're all going to.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was just man, I don't know if someone did some satanic ritual to the devil or some shit, but we were just lucky enough to get right off the get-go to be able to have these things and to start tour the way we never thought, you know, was possible. So,
well, it's an investment. I mean, you know, in your band, that's the thing. Like a lot of people, I heard people shit talking your band. I mean, I'm wondering what is this band? Who do they think they are? They haven't paid their dues, you know, saying these things, and in a way, they're not wrong. But at the same time, yeah. It's not your fault. Anyone would do the same thing. But the third thing is, like, you guys could be making all this money right out of the gate, and you're like, no, we're still working on, we need this to be an investment, and we need this to be, you know, investment in our band and make our band bigger and give our fans the right show that they want to see. So in that way, I was sort of more of the defender of you guys, saying that's actually pretty crazy, and I don't think a lot of people would do that. Because most bands would be like, okay, how much money? Great. You know, we've been doing this band, even though it's 3.5 years to me is like nothing. 3.5 years to somebody, like, I've done this for 3.5 years. I want to get paid. So, you know, most bands would have taken that approach, and you guys didn't.
Yeah, it's been, there's pros and cons. It's kind of tough, you know. At this last 3 years, I none of us came from money. We're all, you know, whether it's living with our parents or bump couch surfing right now, some of us are doing better than others, but no one ever came into this band with, you know, a shit ton of money and was like, cool, like, we're going to buy our way through or buy our way to the top or buy our way anywhere. Right now, yeah, it's getting to the point where it's like, cool, like, I'm finally able to, you know, take a girl on a fancy date kind of thing, where last time it was like with my ex,
ladies,
like,
I hope you're listening. Eric's gonna take you out, man. Where are you gonna take them out? Like Chelly's Chili or something? Where are you going?
Well, shit, like a few years ago, I'm taking my ex girlfriend. We're going down to Walmart to the ramen aisle and getting a bottle of wine. Well, now it's like, all right, cool. I'll get us a nice bottle of whiskey. I'll get, you know, a pretty decent steak. I'll cook it for you. So I'm not going to be able to afford a steak dinner, but, you know, I'll cook one.
Whiskey and steak. No. Sounds very romantic, dude.
my whole point behind that, though, is it's, you know, none of us came from money. So, like, when we're all touring right now and doing all these things, it's like, it's, we see a future, and we have goals, and we don't want to cash out right now at all.
Oh, so
that means, like, we gotta, on our personal end, you know, not struggle, but, you know, just ride it out, you know, at bare minimum on the home front, but be able to do this out on the road and put on a crazy show for fans, which in turn hopefully brings more people the next time and bigger adventures to follow. I mean, of course, we're gonna do that. You know, that's not a huge sacrifice for us at all. But I see this thing going for quite a while, so we're gonna wait to cash in on anything.
Well, yeah, sure. I mean, absolutely. Was it when you guys, you know, you talk about your first few shows being like sold out and crazy, it must have been really, really hard to just like get up there and do a headline show, never playing before. I mean, you say you practiced and practiced and practiced, but you can never really prepare
that.
So how are those shows? Vocally, sure, like screaming that long and everything. How did that go?
I mean, I was going to say locally, when I was playing shows, I was playing to maybe like 10 kids. And then this band takes off, and our first show is the 400 kids. It's, you know, we only had an EP and a cover, so we had 45 minutes of material or headlining. So it's like, shit, you know, we got to give them more than a 30, 40 minute show. So we're, you know, we made it a little routine in between songs. We're like, you know, telling, you know, the Blink-182 dick and fart jokes where, you know, we're trying to make it, you know, experience. But yeah, that was kind of rough. The first couple tours, like not knowing what we were getting ourselves into, being headliner, and, you know, only having, you know, 7 or 8 songs and, you know, these bands that were taken out could play double what we're playing. It was kind of, you know, a little nerve wracking, especially, for me, like going up there being cool. The guitarist and the drums and the bass, they just got to play their parts, you know, in between songs. how am I going to, what am I going to do talking to 400 people? I've never talked to more than 20 people at a time.
Yeah. But, it must have been terrifying. It must have been terrifying. I can't imagine the nerves. That's crazy.
Oh, it was definitely a learning experience. Now it's funny. The guys give me shit all the time. If we play in front of like we're playing Carolina Rebellion tomorrow and, say a couple thousand people there, I will be able to talk to that crowd. No problem. But if there's, 100 people at a crowd or we're doing like a VIP thing where there's just 50 people and I got to talk to them all, I freeze up. I don't know why. The less people there are, the more anxious and, stage fright I get.
I'm the same exact way, man. Exactly the same.
Are you really? Okay.
Absolutely.
I'm glad it's just not me.
And if there's specific people in the crowd, it'll change it too. Like if my parents are there, it doesn't matter how many people are there. If my parents are there, affects the way I talk.
Yep.
Or if there's a girl I kind of like that, it's amazing. It's really amazing how these little factors can affect it. But it's I remember I was doing a meet and greet actually in Michigan, actually at the Crowfoot. I did a solo show there.
Oh,
it
really?
Was my first ever solo show I'd ever done.
Oh.
I played at the small room there at Crowfoot. And so I had a little VIP that I was doing. And usually when Silverstein does a VIP, it's all five of us and we're joking around and it's fun. And there's a crowd. And this, I don't know, there was probably 25 or 30 people there. And I kind of did a Q&A and I realized it's just me, man. There's no one else to take these questions when I don't know what to say.
Right.
It really is it is amazing how when you're, there's something different about the small crowds, and I think every face is more personal than when you're at a festival in Europe and there's 80,000 people and it's just you're playing to a sea of people. You're just you can't make out any one person.
Exactly.
So I guess that's
exactly
the difference.
Yeah, that's when there's 200 people there, you see faces, and then you get three songs in, and then you see those same faces, and you I start going, oh my god, am I doing good? Do they like it? Are they having a good time? Oh man! But when there's 2,000 people there, I don't see that same person, at all. So I think that's got a lot to do with it for me too.
Yeah, absolutely, man. So talking about you guys and just your your internet presence, for lack of a better, term, you guys really went in hard with this cover of Taylor Swift, which I'm sure you get asked about all the time.
Oh, yeah.
And it blew up. It blew up, and it really did put you guys on the map. And it was kind of, the bridge that people started figuring out about your original music. How was that for you, kind of realizing, a lot of people just want to hear us play a song that's not ours. And do you think you're going to have to play it forever?
Well, I'll tell you right now, starting Warped Tour, we're not going to play that song until we might pull it out on a headliner every now and then. But yeah, after this tour is done, we're going to be done playing that for a while. And I feel like some bands would just, not play it and not make a big deal about it. But I kind of want to just make it known that we're not a band that just thrives off covers. That was something we did. We've seen bands that we were fans of growing up. The Punkos pop series, all of them, they were big, big deals for us. I remember, A Day to Remember did a cover, Devil Wears Prada. You guys, nailed that cover. It was just something that we saw. We're like, well, after all these bands did a cover, they took a step up in their career. I feel like it, whether it was intentional or not, it just felt like every time I saw a band, an underground band or a metal band that wasn't very well known do a cover, they just had another step up. They reached more people. So we were like, well, how's the best way a brand new local band with no connections going to make a splash in the Michigan music scene? We did a cover, and then that we were like, all right, cool, we'll do this cover. We did the cover and we released it, and not only did it blow up in our local area, it just took off everywhere. But we planned that right after we released it on Cyber Monday, we'd have our EP available the week later.
Yeah.
So people could easily just go from the cover right to our EP and be like, oh, cool, this actually sounds like them. This actually sounds like a song that they could have wrote. It's not just a cover and then they listen to the album. It's nothing like it. So you know what? I'm glad we did it. I know we get shit for it all the time. And I guess all I have to say to those kids that are talking shit, man, maybe if those kids talking shit spent less time talking shit and actually more time on their own music or whatever their craft is, maybe they'd get somewhere. But yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, you yeah, absolutely. You know, that's, I don't know. It was, you well put. I mean, and the thing you say about bands taking a step up in their career after a cover song, you're absolutely right. And in one band you brought up, Data Remember, and I just remembered the Kelly Clarkson song they did, Since You've Been Gone, that was like kind of their first hit.
Yeah,
to be honest, like up here in Canada, that was, they were playing that on Much Music and stuff, like on Much Music, like, maybe,
really?
You know, it's like MTV basically for
yeah,
Canada.
Yeah, yeah, I've heard
they
it.
Were getting play up here on that, and they were getting like mainstream attention where they're, I think they'd already put out For Those Who Have Heart, that record had already come out.
Yep.
But there wasn't really like any real hits, you know, mainstream hits, but they'd gotten some heat. And then that song was actually like their first kind of single in a way that actually, you know, connected. So, and yeah, you know, you look at Data Remember now, no one's talking about the Kelly Clarkson cover anymore. They
exactly.
might still play it,
exactly.
they might not, but no one's talking about that anymore. And that really was a song that got, you know, them into a lot of people's, you know, minds as, oh, this is a, you know, a band to check out.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, my friend showed me, like, The Plot to Bomb the Panhandle and The Danger right. in Starting a Fire. Like, you know, a couple of those songs. And I was like, oh, this is really cool. And then I heard that cover, and I was like, wow, this is great. And I went and bought their next album, Homesick. And
right.
that
yeah.
honestly
well,
is one of my top 10 albums still. You know, that's
sure.
just how it worked. And that's kind of, we've seen that happen, and we're like, shit, well, you know, we could try and do the same, you know?
So, Warped Tour. Warped Tour's coming. As a fan
oh, man.
Of this genre,
yeah.
I know it's you guys' first time. As a fan of the genre, as a fan, did you grow up going to Warped Tour?
I've been to, I think, 5 Warped Tours in a row growing up, and then
nice.
This took off.
Nice, sick.
But,
so, you're excited?
Yeah, huge fan. Oh, dude, so excited. This lineup this year is awesome. I mean, I'm a huge metal fan, but I'm also, I got a very eclectic taste, so...
Yep.
One minute you're going to catch me watching Knock Loose and the Casey Strain. And then after that, I'm going to be coming watching you guys and Dance Gavin Dance, you know?
Absolutely, no. It's good. Good people.
But,
good,
yeah,
good
we're stoked.
What parts of it are you looking forward to? And do you kind of, do you realize what you're getting into? Like, it's not an easy tour.
Yeah, I've heard it's like band boot camp. I'm excited just for the fact that, like, you know, like you said, we're very new to this, and there are a lot of bands out there that are bands that I've looked up to growing up, or that I'm just like new bands. Like, I know I've said it before and I've said this in other interviews, but Knock Loose, I've seen them. They're up and coming. They're killing it. So it's cool. I'm excited to go and see, like I said, these bands that I grew up listening to, or these bands that are just up and coming and killing it. And I'm stoked for that. And then I hear like how, you know, how difficult the sleep schedule or the travel and all, everything, the heat and all that. I, you know what, maybe the last half of the tour, it'll get to me, but I know I'm going to be living off of, you know, my dreams right here in the first couple of weeks. That'll get me through the shit. So I'm, you know, I'm excited. I'm kind of just not, I'm trying not to think of the negative side of it.
Hell yeah, man. One other thing, like, so, we've done Warped Tour, Silverstein. We've done Warped Tour. I think this is our, oh geez, 7th time or 8th time. I think 7.
Oh shit!
So we're the veterans, and
yeah.
What I like to do every chance I get is leave the show, leave the park completely, and if I can ever find a baseball game to go to, I'm all about it. So maybe, Eric, if you want to come to a baseball game with me, we can leave the park one night and go check out some baseball parks. What do you think?
Absolutely. I'm all about that.
Hell yeah, man. Well, I don't want to take up too much more of your time. Thanks for doing this. Thanks for you know, the day off love for me. I hope Brian's feeling better. I hope the whiskey will be flowing for you later. I want to ask you one more question about the crazy bus fire you guys had.
What
the fuck happened? And that must have been very fucked up.
Oh man. So it starts off, we were on a headliner tour, strike the match with our boys in the White Noise, My Enemies and I, and oh shit, who else was on that run?
Wow, they're going to be so mad at you for forgetting.
Oh, it was Bad Seed Rising. So it was this tour, and there was a first time on a bus, and come to find out, it was Pantera's old bus, and this thing was just barely out of the 90s. I mean, right. It was old, and that tour was 6 weeks long, and it was in the summer. And we're in the heat of the summer, and the AC goes out, and it breaks down this day. And we had to rent cars to go from Jersey to Boston with our gear to get to the show while our bus was getting fixed. And that honestly happened out of those 6 weeks. That happened probably six or seven times. At least once a week, we didn't have our bus. So that was frustrating. And then we had 5 days off in Colorado, and then we hopped on the Pierce the Veil tour with Neck Deep. But when we hopped on that tour, the bus company just gave us another bus. They're like, ah, fuck it. We'll just, you know, here, we'll give you this bus. We take that bus, and it's a little nicer. It's still pretty old, but we're like, holy shit, we're on a bus still. This is great.
Yeah.
Well, that bus and the bus driver wasn't really maintaining the bus very well. Every night I go back, we're walking, you know, hanging out or whatever. I see the back of our bus. It's just covered in oil. And I'm
covered
like, that's
in oil?
Not. Oil, yeah. You ever see like semi trucks or buses?
Yeah.
It's just black soot on the back. Yeah. It was
right.
Covered,
you're a car guy. You're a car guy, so you obviously know this stuff, right? With your dad running a car shop and you going to car shows. Yeah, of course.
Well, there's been a few times where the bus driver wasn't there, so I opened up the back of the bus just to make sure the hoses and
right.
all the shit was connected because it was freaking me out. Well, we were leaking shit all the time. Well, so fast forward 5 weeks, we're on the last 2 days of tour with Pierce. We're driving through California on the 90. We're out in Fresno, and I think they call it the Grapevines or whatever, the hills, the mountains out there.
Uh-huh.
And we're just going up and down. It's 8 o'clock in the morning, whatever. And apparently the brakes are going bad. They're sparking. The sparks caught the oil on fire that's been sitting on the bus. That oil started smoldering, all that shit. It caught to the engine. The engine went up in flames. And, you know, on those buses, the engine is in the back under the lounge, you know? So I'm in the back sleeping in my boxers, you know, don't go daydreaming about me in my boxers now, but we're sleeping in the back, and our bus driver comes running out and grabbing us one by one. 9 o'clock in the morning, I'm standing on the side of the freeway just in my boxers watching our bus go up in smoke, you know. So it was a shit day. We lost, you know, I collect records too. I have probably like 5 or 6 records on the bus. I lost my clothes, my GoPro. Our passports, you know, it sucked. Luckily, our gear was good. We salvaged a little bit of clothes, but thank God, Pierce the Veil, they're the homies. They sent their crew bus. Their cruise bus turned around, came and picked us up. They were an hour out of the way. But, and then we
best
finished
guys.
That tour.
Best guys.
What's that?
Best guys.
Oh, yeah.
My homies, too. Oh, man.
Yeah,
that's,
they're awesome dudes.
But everybody got out okay. There was no issue with that, right?
I mean, no. Everyone was good. It was, I don't remember what it was, but one of our dudes and our crew totally forgot something on the bus, and it's in flames right now. And he goes running back on the bus to get it. And I don't remember what it was, but I was like, are you an idiot?
Right.
Are you an idiot? And then we're trying to pull gear out of our trailer because it was in the back. The fire was in the back of the bus, so we're in the trailer yanking shit out. And police officers are there before the fire trucks. And they're like, we're going to arrest the next person that runs in there. It's for your own safety. We're going to arrest you.
Right.
Fuck that. So
yeah, you're like, fuck
there.
Off.
Like,
that's my fucking, like, guitar. Like, that's, the, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Well, we had the drum trunk was all the way in the front. And that had all our drummer's gear in it. And we're like, we can't lose that. So.
That's insane,
yeah, after
man.
That,
wow.
After that, things have been pretty decent.
Damn, well, hey, shit, I don't even know what to say. That sucks you had to go through that, but I'm glad everything is okay. And
yeah, that's the best we could hope for. I mean, we see bands getting accidents, like obviously the Ghost Inside. That's something that we're always worried about and
sure.
We think about all the time. And, you know, props to them for everything they're doing still. I don't know how I, you know, just being in that fire, I was nervous to get back in a car for the next 2 or 3 months, so... I mean, to any band that's been in a rollover or a crash or anything, like, I give them mad props to being able to go back
Get
out
back
and do
up.
What they love. That's, holy shit.
No, I know. Absolutely. Absolutely, man. Well, hey, thank you so much for taking the time, Eric. And I guess I'll talk to Brian soon. Let him know I said what's up. And I hope everybody,
Sounds good.
Rest of the tour goes awesome. And I'll see you on Warp, man.
Thanks a lot, man. Sounds good. Thank you so much for having me. I know a bunch of us have been fans of Silverstein and fans of you guys for a while. So thanks a lot, man. Really appreciate it.
Hey, thank you, Eric. All the best, man.
Sounds good. Same to you, buddy.
Cheers. So there it is with Eric Vanlerberg. I think I got his name correct. What a nice dude. Really cool. I love how down to earth these guys are. And they aren't, like he says, they aren't rich kids. They didn't come from money and they bought this career. They really did work hard and they used, hey, they used what's in between their ears to actually make this band big and successful. And I wish them all the success. And next week, we're going to talk to Brian, the clean vocalist of I Prevail, and get his perspective on things. And believe me, his perspective on things is very, very cool as well. Before I go, I want to tell you about another podcast you should definitely check out. It's called O Marks the Spot, and it is the Outer Loop Management Podcast. And it's designed to give listeners a look behind the scenes of the most interesting happenings from week to week at the label management company. Host Mike Mowry, who actually is one of the owners of the Jabberjaw Media Network, and Outer Loop staff members Lance and Susie discuss what it takes to run a label from every aspect, highlighting the successes and challenges from week to week. So check it out, O Marks the Spot. I'm sure if you search for it, it'll pop right up. As always, I will leave you with a tune. And no, I won't play the Taylor Swift cover. I'm sure you know how that song goes anyways. So here is an I Prevail jam. It's called Stuck in Your Head. I'm Lead Singer Syndrome. Peace and love. We'll see you next week. Stuck in your head.
Play again. You're not the one I want in my bed.